It's very difficult to give it good advice. And if you're wondering if that's true, just ask the man sitting across from me. Philip Galanis gives advice for a living each week in his Social Cues column for the style section of the Sunday New York Times. Today we'll be discussing the delicate art of when to weigh in, whether to, and how. Not to mention what to do when you get advice, especially when it's unwelcome or bad. I am very pleased, Philip, that you were able to join us again, especially for a topic that's so close to your heart.
Yes.
And for our audience, here's your chance to ask Philip advice about giving or getting advice. Give us a call at 212-433-9692. You can write in on our show page at WNYC.org. Also, you can use Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Thopate. Have you always been good at giving advice?
I've always been able, because of my, I think, thanks to my immediate family structure, where we confused how badly we wanted to say something with the necessity of saying it. I've always been very careful to, and I know how hurtful it can be to get advice that you didn't really want. So I've always been very careful about giving advice because I see how much it can hurt people when you weigh in about their shoes or their clothes or their fat hiney or any old thing, their husband or their job. So I've always been a cautious advice giver, which may be the best kind of advice giver.
There is always somebody I remember at school who people came to for advice. I don't know why they were the ones that we appointed as the wisest. But I have a feeling they weren't the happiest people.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think the people who those people came to were the ones who could also keep secrets. And those are, can be, in my experience, and I would certainly put myself squarely in this category, can be the most manipulative people, the ones who can keep secrets, because we're often trading in the power of information, too.
Have you been given good advice over the course of your life?
I have been. I've been very good at trusting my gut about the best men and women to trust with my problems. I had a sensational shrink for about 400 years, and I mean, witness the fact that I stayed with him for 400 years. I just couldn't. I just couldn't imagine my life without getting advice from him.
But there's a difference when you go to a professional, you're paying for it, and when somebody gives it to you, even if you're asking someone for advice, sometimes that's not what you really want.
Right.
Maybe you just simply want to be heard.
Well, maybe I'm like a perfect representative of our generation in that I love to pay for advice. I rarely ask people, I rarely ask another civilian what they think, which is why I'm so stunned at the volume of mail I get every week.
People trust you.
People trust me. And I'm thinking, I wonder why that is. They don't know me. I guess that we've got a track record and of columns, and so they see, okay, this guy's not going to cut me down to, you know, blood and, you know, hair follicles. But I always think you get what you pay for.
Well, advice columnists have, as you say, a track record. When you wrote into Dear Abby, you had a pretty good idea of what she thought about certain things.
Right.
When I read you, and I have a pretty good idea of how you're going to respond, although once in a while you surprise me, usually in a good way. But it's also because you've seen this person in action. You feel, as you said, this person's not going to cut me down and make me look stupid.
Right.
Even though they're anonymous, aren't they? You don't print people's names.
Occasionally we print their first names. The ones that I'm very, very wary of are the people who want their first and last names and hometowns and street addresses printed, and they're complaining about their sister-in-law. And I say, okay, well, that's just a scream for passive aggressiveness. But, you know, Dear Abby was a huge fixture in our family. We got a morning paper where I lived, and so I would run out and I would read the questions to my assembled family, and we would all everyone would weigh in, and then I would read Dear Abby's answer. And there was, like, no question that she could ever be wrong. It was just that's what we, you know, did.
Well, interestingly, the New York Post for many years had a psychiatrist who, Dr. Rose Franzblau, who answered questions very much the way a shrink would answer questions.
I love that. I don't know Dr. Rose Franzblau. What, did you like her advice? Did you read it as
a kid?
Well,
of course I read it all the time. Yeah. I came from a family where my parents were Freudians. how can you tell if someone just wants to vent, really doesn't want advice?
Well, that's a really you go right to the heart of it, Leonard, because many times I usually make people in my life personally, I usually make people ask me a couple of times for what they think, especially if it involves a breakup or a nasty fight at the office, a problem with a spouse.
They want you to take sides more often than
that. Yeah, they just and sometimes they just want to be petted and say and have you say, God, that's really, I'm really sorry that happened to you, which is, and if that's enough, and then they move on to something else, they didn't really want your advice.
It's also been pointed out that in male-female relationships, often a woman will talk about a problem to her husband or some man, and he'll give advice when what she really wants is for the other person to say, I understand what you're feeling. This is really a tough time for you.
We just had a few weeks ago had dealt with this issue in the column, and I got a huge email response from both men and women after the fact. A woman had gone into like a big box store and somebody cut in front of her in line, and she came out to the car where her husband was waiting and said, I am so annoyed. I was just cheated out of my space in line. And the husband said, maybe you should have stuck up for yourself. And the wife transferred all of her anger from the guy who cut in front of her in line onto her husband for not being a supportive husband and instead further re-victimizing her all over again. And men, it's interesting. It's like one of those Deborah Tannen, you know, issues about language and how men and women can use it differently.
If you have any questions about how to give advice or have a sad tale to tell, you can give us a call at 212-433-9600.
Or a happy one, Leonard. Sometimes advice is happy.
Let me give out that number again, 212-433-9692. You can write us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. When people meet you and discover who you are, do they start asking you for advice?
I meet two kinds of people, the kind who need to let me know immediately that what they think I do is just full of nonsense and so beneath them.
Really?
Hostile.
They tell you that?
But the fortune.
I would advise them to keep that to themselves.
Thank you. but the far likelier thing is, and it's really sweet, and it really makes me happy when they say, "Oh my God, I love that column. I never would have imagined that the person who gave the advice looked like you." Mm-hmm. And when I ask them what they thought I might look like, they never really have an idea. It wasn't a person. And maybe that's the idea, that this advice is coming out of a box of some kind.
Or like Miss Lonely Hearts, the great novel in which Miss Lonely Hearts was actually a man.
I know.
Angela in Brooklyn asks, what's the best way to handle people who claim to want advice but really only seem to want to drag you into their drama over and over again?
Well, that's really a big problem. And that's why I say, Angela, if there's a way you can sympathize with the problem and the problem that they're having, especially if it involves romantic relationships or problems that just seem intractable, then I'd say try to avoid it. But when they really come back to you two or three times, I think in a cautious way, you then give your advice, always with enough wiggle room so that they don't. It's not a problem for your relationship with them if the person you're giving advice to decides not to take it, because that can create, you know, discomfort.
Judy from Fort Greene asks the opposite kind of question. What do you do when people give you unsolicited advice?
Well, that's
just simply
the kind
say,
of thing.
Thank you so much.
Is slapping a possibility, Judy? I know that that's, it's usually hurtful, right? It's usually that the skirt doesn't flatter you, or that you're, or that if you spoke in this kind of way as opposed to that kind of way at meetings, you'd probably get a lot farther. It's a way it's criticism masquerading as only with your best interests at heart. I tell you the following.
You should dye your hair.
Exactly. You should dye your hair. You'd look prettier.
Much
if
younger.
You smiled. I think that I try not to respond to it, and unless you're spoiling for a fight, and then you can say, if this person is a constant fountain of this sort of unsolicited advice/criticism, I could imagine saying to a person like that, you know, I think our relationship would go much more smoothly if you gave me this valuable advice when I asked for it. Because sometimes I'm not ready to hear it when you're ready to give it.
On the other hand, sometimes we see somebody who is suffering from serious problems, and we just want to give them advice. You know, here's a way you might handle that, and it might really be helpful. So you have to know when to do that and when the other person is going to respond in a positive way.
Right. To make it specific, here's a story a real life story that happened to me. In my life as a lawyer and as an entertainment lawyer, I had an assistant. He was a brilliant young guy, and he came into work just with food stains all over his clothes and really badly, dirty kind of. I won't say smelly, but just in really bad shape. And I could see that the way other people dealt with him, they made immediate assumptions about him, his competence, his intelligence, and they were all wrong. This guy was really a great, smart lawyer and person. So after months of deliberation, I brought him into my office and we sat down and talked about it. And of course, I can't say I noticed any uptick. I wish I could tell you a Cinderella story here, but there was a small uptick, maybe as big an uptick as this guy was, capable of making. And there was an improvement. He was brought onto cases and matters that he otherwise wouldn't have been.
I had a similar situation. I worked with someone who was very smart and understood radio very well, but she used to sometimes sit cross-legged on her chair, her skirt would ride up, we would see her underwear, and she was not really respected by the people above her in management. And then she got a job at some really high-powered place, and I decided to tell her that she should
as a going away
well
gift.
I said, look, if you really want to be respected by the people you're going to be working with, try not to sit in that position or do those things that are going to make people judge you wrongly, judge your competence wrongly.
How did she take it?
I think she took it okay. I don't know. She held on to that job for
good.
A while.
Good. I felt like the guy that I spoke with was very grateful for it, for the advice. But I think, again, if you want to say something that is bordering on criticism, it's not a bad thing for the person who's going to say it to deliberate for a while.
We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll be taking your calls to Philip Galanis, who writes the Social Cues column weekly in the Style section of the Sunday New York Times. Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. We are back with Philip Galanis, who writes the Social Cues column weekly in the Style section of the Sunday New York Times, taking your calls at 212-433-9692. And let's get to some of those calls. First, Judith from West Caldwell, New Jersey. Hi, Judith. You're on the air.
Oh, hello, and thank you so much for doing this. It is always good to just pause and look at how we think and how we speak to other people.
I agree.
Yes. Me too.
So my question is, it's almost frivolous, but actually it has a deeper implication. My sister and I are having a constant debate over whether or not it is appropriate to go up to a total stranger and fix that little tag that sticks out of their collar.
Here's, you and your sister are both women, and one of the things I'll say from Judith, from having done this to a woman, having done that little tag thing, coming from me, she was very uncomfortable. Coming from another woman, it might be a lot more comfortable. And I also think if there's somebody with that woman, if she's sitting with at lunch with another friend and or somebody better positioned to do it for her, I generally tend to let it go. But if not, I think you and your sister should take that kind little extra step because you seem like you do it in a pretty sweet way.
Would you, Judith, would you tell a man that his fly is open?
That would be awkward. If it was a total stranger, I don't think I would.
That's a good one, Leonard.
So a man probably could do that.
I could do that. I would welcome Leonard's doing that to me, but it might make me feel a little less comfortable if it came from Melissa.
Let's take another call. This one is Robin from Manhattan. Hi, Robin. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you?
We are well. You have good advice?
So I hope you can hear me. I'm in my car.
We hear you.
Don't get into an accident.
Yeah, no.
That's good advice.
So here's my question. Somebody actually does ask you for advice, and you give it to them, and then they don't take it.
Right.
And then their problem continues, and they come back to you again. And are complaining and asking you for advice.
Yeah.
I usually lose my patience at that point and say, I told you what to do. You didn't listen to me, so don't bother me anymore. Just interested on your take on that.
Well, you're certainly speaking up what we all think. But I always think that when people ask for advice, if when people ask me for advice, I'm assuming that I am one of a number of people who they're asking. And they aren't yet comfortable. I mean, let's just assume that you're giving some terrific advice. But for whatever reason, this person isn't ready to quit her job or leave her husband or pull her kid out of the expensive school and put him in the local public school. He or she isn't ready to do that big thing yet. Maybe they'll get to that big thing eventually. So I think just, you know, putting on your best sweet voice and saying, well, listen, you know what I think. You know what I think about this, Ruth. And let's just see if you get there yourself.
Okay. And we have Betsy from New York who writes in, I have two people who tell me they don't like my hair. I get many compliments from friends and strangers. Someone once told me to say, that really hurts my feelings. And she says it works.
Well,
is that what you would suggest you do?
Of course it works. Can I say something? Of course it doesn't always work. I tell people, there are people in my life I tell all the time that when you say things like that, it really hurts my feelings. And sometimes they say, no, it doesn't. And if I personally wouldn't do it that way, because I wouldn't, maybe I would with a close friend, or I'd just say shut up or something, you know, rude right back. But they've been rude. So the question is, how do you deal with rudeness when it comes at you? I think that the better thing is to sort of you've certainly diffused it by saying you've hurt my feelings. You've taken it. You know, you've pulled the plug on it. But I think that, letting the occasional rudeness slip past is not the end of the world either.
Things like hair are a matter of taste anyway.
Totally.
And the better thing to do is to say to somebody, I love your hair.
If
you like what they're doing, and be quiet if you think it's a mistake.
Always. But when people say, you know, I don't like it, you can say, how interesting, and then just
why not?
Move along.
I wouldn't say why not
because we don't really care what people who criticize us have to think often, especially since it sounds like the preponderance of people are just loving your hairdo.
Joe from New Jersey, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? Can you hear me?
Yes.
I was just going to make a comment. It's really, I wish I'd learned this, and I wish I could practice it better, but where I have, it's worked well. Someone once told me that when another person is explaining a lot of their problems and sort of about ready to seek advice, to ask them, well, what have you already tried? Because that saves you having to start giving advice and find out, well, I tried that, and this is a story, and all of a sudden you're talking about something you didn't want to. I wish I was a good practitioner, but I think it's a good technique to really get at what the person really is asking. It's just asking them, well, what have you already tried to do?
Right.
That's a terrific idea,
especially if it's in a delicate area where you're not particularly comfortable diving in, because often people take the advice that we ask for. Often we'll ask someone for advice. They will give it, and then we will hold it against them. It's just sort of in our human psychology to feel that way. If they say something that we weren't prepared to hear or didn't really want to hear. So I think we have to be very careful, and that's a great way of fencing, because you're still trying to help them get to a solution, but you're not putting yourself in the position of offering a solution that, you know, is beyond you.
And then there's the problem of offering advice. The other person takes it, things end poorly, and now you are responsible. On the other hand, one friend's sister gave her advice, which she should have followed but didn't, and the sister never let her forget it for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, no, that's that kind of, we had the woman caller in the car. It's so tempting to say, well, I told you that. But remember, if people knew what was in their best interest, if they really knew it in their hearts and in their guts, they would do it. And so for some reason, they weren't able to see how good your advice was. It wasn't about you. It was that they themselves weren't ready to do the thing that you wisely knew was right for them.
I'm talking with Philip Galanis, who writes Social Cues column weekly in the Style section of the Sunday New York Times. We're talking about giving and receiving advice. Our number is 212-433-9692, or you can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org, or Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And this is WNYC, WNYC.org. Mike from Larchmont, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I enjoy your show. I have a 19-year-old boy just back home from college who has put on a lot of weight, and he's been moving that direction since he was 16, terrible eater. And it's a very sensitive topic to bring up to him. But now I'm concerned, you know, the health risks. I'd appreciate any kind of insight into how to approach this from a neutral point of view, for which we would see some, you know, benefit.
Right. Let me ask you one question. Is this just a matter of eating, or is there also an element of sloth or sort of inactivity involved too?
Both.
Okay.
Exactly.
Is there any way you could engage him in some kind of physical activity? Tennis? Swimming, basketball?
Yes, there is. Bike riding and... that's a good.
My dad had ever asked me if I wanted to play tennis with him or go swimming with him, I would have been secretly so. I might have rolled my eyes, but I would secretly have been so happy that I would. And especially since he's away, you can express how much you've missed him and sort of plan some activities, even if it's just a hike. And but I know my heart goes out to you because I know that there nothing. You only want him to be healthy, and it's and I know that anything you say on the subject is going to make him feel really self-conscious. So I try to work it out through activities, and if you and your wife are whoever is preparing the dinners in the house can sort of skew more healthfully. But I'd really try not to say anything. But you know, you might get to a point where you need to say something, and you know, that's when a doctor or the family doctor can be extremely helpful. Let her say it.
So it's if you can find a way to get the kid to the doctor to be told what to do. Kay from New York asks a question that I think is the subject of many comedy routines. What if your mother-in-law often wants to give you a career advice? We don't share worldviews, and her way of approaching things goes against every fiber of my body.
So it sounds like you've already got some well-built walls in place because she is still welcome in your home. You're still seeing her and talking with her. I just ask you to build the wall a brick or two higher because I think it's probably really unlikely that you are going to change her worldview. And she's probably not somebody you want to invest that much effort and emotional, psychological effort into. When people like that give me advice, I think, how interesting. Thanks. Thank you very much. Let me think about that and just try to forget it as fast as you humanly can. But for the sake of your husband, if it's something you can live with, just let it slide. Who cares?
This can be a problem in other ways. There are people who think they know best, and because they are your mother-in-law or your mother, they often feel that there should be no problem.
Right.
What
came out of left field in that question was the fact that it was about career. I liked that because the question I usually get, and I get it again and again and again and again at the column, is that the mother-in-law wants to talk about child rearing, or she wants to talk about things that are more personal. Your career is your career. She has no interest in it. She has some, you know, putative interest in her grandchild. But so you maybe have to take a little bit more account of that. But her career, just thank her, nod, and forget that she ever said it.
Dr. S. from Westchester, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. And I have to say this is a very relevant topic, of course, in the clinical context, but also in relationships in general, as you're saying.
Are you a doctor? You're a doctor. You're a psychiatrist.
Yes. Something I find to be very helpful when in the clinical context, and then I, you know, try to use it in my personal life as well, though not quite as easily, is to ask permission for giving the advice. Would you mind if I offered some advice, or may I give you some advice? And that often softens the delivery of it, in a way where it's more acceptable to the person listening.
Do you find that people ever say no? I mean, I think out of some perverse interest, I'd say, oh, sure. And then I might feel, oh, my God, can you believe that he said that to me?
Well, it's a good point. And I guess I would refrain from asking the question unless the moment seemed really right.
Yeah.
So it would really depend on the individual and the circumstances. It would not be a place where I would begin. The best place I always find to begin is just by listening and expressing empathy, as you were saying earlier.
Well, what you said that was so terrific that we haven't really stressed yet, it seems to me, is how much context is a part of things, too. Mm-hmm. The end
Absolutely.
Of a two-hour dinner where you've really opened up to each other is a place where advice might flow more smoothly and in a more welcome way than, you know, walking up to somebody in the first 3 minutes of a sort of a tense family wedding and saying that. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Timing is everything.
Yeah, exactly.
And we thank you for your call.
Thank you.
And we pretty much run out of time, Philip. But
I can't tell you how much I enjoy being here, Leonard. So if there's a way I can get free tickets from Hamish Linkletter and Lily Rabe,
it's always free. But Shakespeare in the Park is free.
But maybe they'd stand in line for me one morning.
Well, you could ask their advice on that, on how to get in. Do you get a lot of questions about giving advice?
So many questions that I get amount to that. Yes, it's about should I say something, should I not, should I do something, should I not. And not is usually safer.
Mm-hmm. Philip Galanis's column appears every Sunday in the New York Times style section. Philip, I'll give you some advice. You work too hard. Take a couple of weeks off. Go on vacation.
I applaud that advice, Leonard, and I'm going to take it to heart along with everything else you say. Thank you.